You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Amy Tan's sixth novel, The Valley of Amazement, explores the mother-daughter bonds that we've come to expect from this best-selling author and National Book Award finalist. But this time, the mother and daughter are courtesans in Shanghai at the beginning of the 20th century. The Valley of Amazement is published by Echo Books, and Amy Tan was on our show in November to talk about it. We are re-airing that interview for you now. As I understand it, you were at work on another project when you saw the photograph, 10 Beauties of Shanghai, which reminded you of a photograph of your grandmother. Why did those photos inspire you to stop one project and begin another?
Well, the photo was so striking. These 10 beauties were actually wearing clothes identical to my grandmother in my favorite photo, and they were courtesans. And, as I say, the details were so specific, and so I had to think to myself, who was she really?
So did that lead you immediately to assume your grandmother had been a courtesan at one point in her life?
I started to do research to see what were the conditions and then also talking to family members. So I will never know. I would never be able to say definitively. It's a mystery, but it's one. I love mysteries and I love contradictions. That's where stories lie.
What does the word courtesan mean in this context? Are we talking about a prostitute in a brothel or a Chinese version of a geisha?
It would be more like the latter. The first-class courtesans in those days, at least during the early 20th century, were actually being courted. And they actually got to choose the suitor who would have their favors. There was protocol. They were the stars of the time, the Lady Gaga kind of people that everybody admired, but they were looked down upon as well socially.
And sex wasn't always a requirement. Sometimes they were just there to entertain. Sex could result.
Yes, and especially during the 1800s. Later on in the 20th century, by the time it was like the 1910, 1915, it was expected that at some point you would have to choose somebody, and you were looking for a patron, almost like a sugar daddy.
Have you seen Flowers of Shanghai?
I did.
Ho Xiao Shen, this is a great film
that
more people should know.
Yes, beautiful film. Some people, would call it slow, but you enter into that world, and it's just being there, and you see life there and what it might have been. That movie is based on a novel written by a man in 1893 or something like that, and he went to the courtesan houses every night, and I think that it depicts fairly accurately what life was like in the courtesan houses.
So I'm assuming you did a lot of research before
you
started writing this book.
Yes, I did. And talking to academics, I mean, people might think this is, bodice ripper kind of stuff, but a lot of the book is based on actual research. So when you read something that's in there like the protocol for men and they shouldn't urinate in front of the prostitute, that is actually from research.
Because this novel is about the lives of courtesans, you had to write sexual scenes for the first time in your career. Had you purposely avoided them in the past, or was it just that they never came up?
I didn't have any real reason to include that. You don't want gratuitous sex in there. But this was a book about courtesans, and obviously they weren't playing Chinese checkers all the time. And so I had to include something. So my first reader said, I also didn't want to include that because a lot of people think my books are completely autobiographical. I could be a ghost, and they would think, it's based on you being a ghost. So,
but they think every writer, every novelist is writing autobiographical
works. Yeah, secretly is all about
them.
Even
if you're writing about the 13th century.
Right, right. I mean, it is about us, but not in the details that people think it is. So the sex scenes, I thought people would think they'd have a window on my bedroom, and I didn't. I just really resisted. All the sex scenes, though, are heavily researched. They're not what I practice. There's a lot of really peculiar things in there.
I didn't assume that any of this stuff was from your life. But it's interesting that Cosmopolitan published one of your sex scenes. It's a far cry from The New Yorker.
Yeah, it said, the sexiest novel she's ever written. I thought, it's the only novel I've written with sex, so
so many writers tell you that it's really difficult to write well about sex because on the one hand you have pornography. On the other hand, you have all of those embarrassing metaphors,
yeah,
and similes.
Yeah, the corny stuff, you know, the dialogue, the breathless dialogue, the, you know, all of that. And so I asked my editor, please do not let me leave any corny sex scenes in there, or I don't want to get so graphic that it becomes like a medical, you know, textbook. And I had to really decide at what, how this stuff would be represented. I don't think it is. I don't think it is cornier in any way. And I tried to capture both the business aspect of it and what somebody might have felt.
Lucia Minturn, who's called Lulu, is at the center of the story. How did she come to you?
She, in some ways, represents. All these characters represents me. Here's the autobiographical part, you know. So you're an American, and suddenly you're cast into another world. You're in Shanghai. All your American assumptions, all your intuitions and things like that, they don't work in another country. And that happened to me, and I wanted to know, well...
When you went to China?
The first time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when I go there, not so much now. But it's like the title of the book, The Valley of Amazement. You enter in a place at some point in your life, and you don't know if that storm you see is coming or going, or if it's dawn or dusk. And so I wanted a character who felt that. Violet actually is more of the main character, the daughter. And she, too, has this, her world turned upside down.
My guest is Amy Tan, and her latest novel is called The Valley of Amazement. It's published by Echo Books, which is an imprint of HarperCollins. Well, she, Lulu follows her Chinese lover, Lu Xing, whom she met in San Francisco, to Shanghai in the late 1800s. Was there a lot of back-and-forth movement in the Chinese community?
There, you know, I had to research to see if there were people who would come to study. I mean, he's an art student.
Well, people were afraid to cut their pigtails at
yeah,
that point.
Back at that point, they didn't. And to be modern, you know, later on, they had to when the Qing Dynasty was overthrown and or otherwise risk somebody chopping it off for them. But this young man is from a well-to-do scholar family. And I found out that there was a painter who stayed about 10 years in the United States to study painting.
And met up with the local girl. And
oh, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's
no, but in your
in
book,
yes,
anyway.
Yes.
And she goes with him to Shanghai, but they are kept separate during the month-long ship ride.
Because, you know, Chinese people were not allowed to be on the same deck. You know, they had to be kept below. It didn't matter if you were a very high-class educated person. There was separation, just as there was in Shanghai.
Well, Shanghai had all of these different foreign settlements,
yeah.
But were they all segregated? There was an American settlement in Shanghai.
There was an international settlement where there were Chinese people living there as well as Westerners. But they weren't separated, but they acted separately. You would never have a Chinese friend if you were an American. And you would have servants who were Chinese, and you would speak to them in pidgin, even though they were highly educated. It was that kind of social separation that I think really characterized Shanghai and what I wanted to characterize in the story. Once you became Chinese, which is what happened to Violet, her entire life, her circumstances changed and how she looked at herself.
Well, in this case with Lulu, things are turned upside down. In Shanghai,
yeah.
The Chinese people, no matter how high class they are,
yeah.
would always be second-class citizens in their right. own country.
Right.
But
two Westerners,
she, but
yeah.
she's not allowed to marry, or she doesn't marry Lu Xing. She becomes his secret wife.
You know, yeah,
which would be a rather unusual arrangement at the time.
I read about cases where there was an American woman who married into a very high-class Chinese family, and the woman was beaten to death by her mother-in-law, and there was nothing really done about it because she was under Chinese law. She must have done something wrong. I think
she burned
the rice, or who knows what. She didn't have a child who was completely Chinese. But there was, I think, this sense of fate versus destiny, Chinese fate. You can't change the rules of China. You can't change tradition or 900 years of family generations. And
she's set adrift, and she becomes a courtesan to support herself and her two kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But then she leaves Shanghai, returns to San Francisco without her children, and mm-hmm. and that's where Lulu's daughter Violet takes over. She also becomes a courtesan.
She has to. You know, there's really, she's lived in the courtesan world in her mother's house, and then she's actually kidnapped and placed in another house.
Is she considered a lesser being because she's Eurasian?
In part, she is, but then she ends up being able to take that to her advantage when she makes a big splash at her debutante party. Yeah.
Well, when the Qing dynasty fell, did Westerners suddenly face problems that they hadn't had before?
I think there was a lot of there was confusion and there was uncertainty. But some of them, I don't think they thought it was going to change dramatically, because in international settlement, they were an enclave unto their own. They had their own laws.
But. And that really only changed after the Japanese invaded at the beginning of World War II.
December 7th, everything changed for them.
You've included Walt Whitman poems in this book.
The
book. Why?
I ran into it. There are things that happen by coincidence, and they become part of the book. And I think that they're a gift from my grandmother. I ran across this poem, and to me, it was the epitome of the story. It was the essence of the story about what you go through in life and what essence is left when all of this stuff goes away, the wars, the strife, you know, this and that. And that was why I included it.
You wrote about a village for National Geographic. Did that inspire Moon Pond Village in this novel?
It did, yeah. I went to this, one of the poorest provinces in China, and stayed in a place where there had been a fire, and they blamed a man and a banished man, and I had to climb up this mountain, this very dangerous path, and go meet this man in a cowshed. And that became a lot of the research later about traveling up a mountain like that and living in a little village.
How much has China changed over the course of your visits?
Changed dramatically over the years, and especially in the last 10 years. It seemed, sometimes it changed every month. You'd see new buildings, things torn down. But it's also changed in its attitude, you know, this capitalism that operates also by different rules.
Well, the village you went to was a Dong minority village.
Yeah.
Are minorities still treated as second-class citizens in China?
Well, they operate. They have a different life because they're out in the country. And so they don't have the same changes happening in capitalism and earning the money. I was in a place where the average income was $70 a year per family. So they are still profoundly poor.
And if they were to go to Shanghai or to one of the new cities in Guangdong, where everybody is going to find jobs, would they be immediately spotted as not being Han Chinese?
No, I don't think they would be discriminated against. It would have more to do with their, you know, are they country bumpkins kind of thing. And there are a lot of young people leaving those villages and going into the cities. And changing, really, the countryside, of turning it into old people and babies.
Our listeners may remember that between the publication of your last novel, Saving Fish from Drowning, and this one, you wrote libretto for an opera version of your novel, The Bonesetter's Daughter. Was writing a libretto like writing a screenplay?
No, not like a screenplay at all. But, you know,
because you
libretto,
wrote the screenplay for the Joy Luck Club.
Yes. The difference is, I think, in opera, the music is predominant. The voices, the singing, the music. And you provide the structure with the libretto and the sense of tone and what the aria might be about. But it's really all about music.
You've also said that you and your husband, during that time, built an accessible home. Accessible mean? You
well,
put ramps instead of stairs?
No. But it does have an elevator. But I see all these people, you know, you get older, and you see all these people, first their parents who have to move out of their homes because they can't get up the stairs or into the bathroom. And then I think, well, I'm going to be following in their footsteps.
You've got a way to go, Amy.
Oh, you know, I'm over 60, so you never know what's going to happen. No, I mean, you look, okay, I had a ski accident twice, and I was in a wheelchair, okay? I got Lyme disease. I could barely walk up the stairs. You never know what's going to happen. I never wanted to leave that area where I live, so I built a house.
Has the rock band that you and Maya Angelou, Barbara King, Salva, Stephen Cohn, King, Scott Turow, and others been in disbanded, the Rock Bottom Remainders disbanded because you're all over 60 now?
No, we have no shame. That never would happen. We thought, well, you know, this has gone on. We've had a great run. Our founder died, Kathy Kamen Goldmark. But we're having her first annual reunion in Miami this year, 1 year after we disbanded.
Amy Tan's latest novel is The Valley of Amazement. It is published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you again, Leonard.